Happy New 2009. Day two.
All right, we'll get started. Hopefully the morning hasn't been too difficult for some of you. I'm not sure if any of you stayed out too late for drinks last night. I know I didn't. I had to go back and do some work, so I've sadly missed too many of the beers. We're going to talk about Pixel Bender. Does anyone know, just a show of hands, played with Pixel Bender, used Pixel Bender? A couple people don't know what Pixel Bender is, never heard of it, not sure, want to learn some stuff. Okay, bit of a mix. So my name's Andrew Spaulding. I'm a systems engineer for Adobe Australia New Zealand. That's the fancy nectarine guys who put the faces on all the cards. Really good stuff. Email and Twitter if you want to get a hold of me. And I'll punch a whole bunch of links across my Twitter account over the next couple of days. So follow that. Blog posts, links to Mike's website and a few others for resources about a whole bunch of the stuff that we'll cover. So Pixel Bender itself is something that's not new. It's something that's been around for us for a little while in After Effects, in the Creative Suite products. And it's a filter language using a shader technology. So it's what allows us to create some really cool effects in our videos. But now we've started to take that to a whole different range. So you can see here, Pixel Bender technology delivers a common image and video processing infrastructure. You create cool programmable effects that run really, really fast. That's what it is. You make cool effects that can run really, really fast. And these cool effects are built using the Pixel Bender toolkit. This is something that comes with Creative Suite 4. You can actually go ahead and download the newer builds from Adobe Labs. And I'll pull out and show you what the idea is in a few minutes. But you create these kernels. Now, you create these Pixel Bender kernels that will run in After Effects, because that's traditionally where it came from. And they get exported out as different files. So I'm going to really sort of loosely touch on this until we get into the code. So a PBK file is a Pixel Bender kernel. And After Effects also supports PBG, which is a graph format. What this is an XML tag-based format that combines a whole bunch of PBK files. So rather than just having one filter, which might be a Gaussian blur or a lens flare or anything else, you can link up a whole bunch of Pixel Bender filters and run them as a combined effect. And I'll show you what people are doing in terms of combined effects a little bit later on. So we can spit them out that way. We can also spit them out in a format, which is the compiled binary format for Flash, which is a PBJ file. So that'll run inside of Flash Player. So Flex, Flash, Air, anywhere that Flash lives. And then you've also got Pixel Bender support in Photoshop. So if you're using Photoshop CS4, you can go to Labs and download the toolkit extension so that in your filters menu for Photoshop, you can now have a little Pixel Bender gallery show up. So you can start to cycle through a whole bunch of pre-built filters and a whole bunch of different ranges of things that Photoshop traditionally was very slow at doing. So you know how I said you can create cool programmable effects that run really, really fast? So people used to complain, a lot of graphics guys complain about some of the filters in Photoshop taking way too long to process. So a lot of those filters can now be rewritten and run with Pixel Bender. So because of this stuff running really, really fast, people are doing really cool things with the technology that some people wouldn't expect. So we'll show you some of that again later on, towards the end of the session. So let's take a look at the toolkit and the IDE. I'll get the Pixel Bender toolkit, which I'll open up. Very basic sort of toolkit. And anyone that knows a little bit of ActionScript will get the idea for the coding language and what you can start to write in this. It's a sort of very sort of C sort of ActionScript-based language. There's a bit of limitations on what you can do. You can't create custom functions. You can't do loops, all that sort of stuff. You can do basic if-else, but if anyone's a mathematician in the audience, and I'm definitely not, a lot of it really relies on maths, because you're grabbing pixels, you're comparing values of pixels, you're moving pixels around to warp them. It very is maths intensive for a lot of the stuff, but you can pick up on some basic functions. So up the top here, we've got the stage, just like you would have any other tool. It's basically preview a lot of the stuff. We've got some little help stuff on the right-hand side, and we'll get into what we can customize there a little bit later on. And this is the code view down the bottom. And all we need to do is go ahead and click Create a New Filter. So we have a little filter stub that pops up. And then we can load in images and set a few preferences. What I'm going to do is show you the preferences dialog, because some of this is pretty important. there are certain times when you write a pixel bender filter or kernel that things will only work in After Effects or Photoshop, and Flash is a little bit more limited. Why is that? Why is that? Well, there's a shader model specification, just like we've got the, you know, the Swift specification for Flash and all these other things. So there's a shader model spec that's, you know, gosh, it's an open published spec that you can have a look at on the web. I'm not going to read it, but tell me if you do and let me know what I can do with Pixel Bender. But there's Shader Model 3.0, which is what's supported in After Effects and Photoshop, but Shader Model Spec 2.0 is obviously the older spec. There was 20 months between the two specs. And then that's what Flash Player targets. So After Effects and Photoshop can actually leverage the GPU for a lot of these processing, so it can be really, really fast, and that's why people have rewritten filters for Photoshop with Pixel Bender. Flash Player uses the older spec, but that's because you have to get across a whole sort of lower set of hardware with the graphics and get that broader distribution for these effects as well. So it's a cool little thing to tick that box, to have a look at the warnings. You can set your fonts, some of this sort of nice stuff. You can see I've got some metadata for my Pixel Bender kernel. It says the namespace, the description, the author. You can customize all that in there as well. And then a whole bunch of other things. What do we got here? We can force the filters to run on the CPU when we test them in this environment as well. So by default, it's going to run on the GPU. It might be really, really fast. But if you're creating something for Flash, sometimes it's important to have a look at how that filter will perform against the CPU, because that's how Flash will run the Pixel Bender filter. So that's the tool before we start getting into the language. So the kernel, when I click File New to create a new kernel, this is what we got on the screen. This is the basic stub for a Pixel Bender kernel. So we've got what language version have we published for people to start using with this, so version 1.0. I have some metadata at the top, my class name, so. And we've got my kernel class. This is our awesome filter that's got the namespace and the vendor and the version. So just some metadata about the file itself. And then there's some inputs and outputs. So because it's an image processing technology by default, we would take an image in as its input, and then it's going to spit out some pixel output as its output. So that's essentially all it's going to do. And it calls this method evaluatePixel. So that's the default method it has to call to do all of its processing. So what's happening right here? We have our output variable DST, and we're just sampling each and every pixel across from the top to bottom, left to right of that graphic. And essentially, it's just sampling them. We're not modifying it, so it's not going to do anything in this case. This filter. But let's go ahead and look at that and how we might modify that base technology. Okay, so I've got DST. I've got access to all the pixels. And as we're running through this, what I'm going to do is start modifying some things. So we might play around with RGB values, for instance. Maybe you've got an image and you want to create a sepia effect or something else. Bring the red out in some of your images. So I'm going to load an image in as a test image. And the Pixel Bender toolkit comes with just a couple of images. Could be any graphic that you want. So I've just got a landscape here, some canyons. And down the bottom, I'm going to start modifying things. So what I'm going to type is dst.r to get the red channel. And I might just put, what can we do? Let's add 0.5 to every pixel. So we're just instantly modifying the red channel across this pixel. But we don't want to hard code a lot of this stuff, so we can parameterize how Pixel Bender works. And we can access these parameters in Flash as well later on, or even in After Effects or Photoshop. So we can start to add parameters. So we've got our inputs and our outputs. We might just want to go ahead and create a parameter. So I'm going to say parameter. And it's going to be a float. And I'm going to give it a variable name amount. When I go ahead and click run, you'll see that help box on the right now has access to this property amount. So I can now test the different values. But I haven't hooked it up, because I've just said DST down the bottom there, add 0.5 to each of the pixels with the red value. We want to hook that up a little bit. I can then just add in some brackets maybe, And we'll put amount, hit run, and now I can change the red value with the slider. So I can test out how my filter would work. And this sort of stuff's great because then we can animate these properties later on when we bring it into the Flash environment. A whole bunch of other things we can do on these as well. So we can set metadata across our variables as well, our parameters. So things such as a minimum value, so a min value. I might put the minimum value as -5. I'm going to change this filter in a few minutes. Put a max value in there, +5. And then the default value of 0. Again, I'm going to go ahead and run it. Oop, not very good. It's now set at 0 in the middle, and I've got minimum and maximum for 5 either side. We can start playing around with the colors this way. It's a very easy way to manipulate graphics. Previously, trying to do that in, this is setting a parameter and then adding 0.5 to every red pixel on the bitmap or the graphic that you've got in. Trying to do that in ActionScript, for instance, would be probably 10 lines of code, and you have to loop over each of the pixels as well. But that would take, it's pretty intensive to do that in the Flash Player environment. You're better off loading it into PixelBender to do a lot of that sort of stuff. Because here's the benefit of PixelBender, it runs multi-threaded. So if you understand threading with Flash, it's something that people have wanted for a long, long time. PixelBender actually runs in a separate thread. So it's not going to affect the way your application runs. And I'll show you a good example of that later on. So we've got our slider in there. I'm going to modify this. I'm not going to worry about changing color values. What I'm going to do is sort of copy pixels and move them apart, so we can sort of create a bit of a blur, for instance, across this image. And then we'll look at how we take this into to Flash in other environments. So what I'm going to do is create a new variable of type pixel. I'm not going to worry about getting to all the types today. I'll just show you how to use the tool to start with. So I'm going to copy all these. I'll call that same function, sample nearest, which grabs that pixel that I'm at. And I've got the output coordinates. So once it's got a source image, then we've got the output coordinates for those particular images, or those particular pixels. So out coord. But I want to modify the out coordinates. I want to increase maybe by 1 or 2 so I get the offset of those values so I can move them around a little bit. I'm going to use a float here, which will take 2 parameters, obviously think of x, y sort of coordinates. So we've got a float, which takes 2 values, float 2 rather than a float 4, for instance. So we've got that amount slider. So we're always going to offset these by maybe 5 and 5 or 2 and 2, depending on how far I drag this slider around. And then the one last thing I need to do there is add these back together. So I've got the original image and my new image. I basically copied all the pixels but moved them off at a bit of an offset. Number 2. One thing you might have noticed, though, when I clicked on run was because we copied pixels and overlaid pixel again on top of each other, it's added a whole bunch of brightness because we've basically got 2 copies on it. We don't want 2 copies. But I'm still going to have a look at how it will run. Just drag this down. You can see that as I move it around, we're copying the pixels. You can sort of notice it more on the tree, for instance. You can see we've got 2 copies of that same image now, and we've offsetted those individual pixels. But what I want to do is halve the value of these because it's way too bright. So our output image for each individual pixel we'll just halve. Goes back to its regular brightness level, and I still have that same sort of effect. So this is a very basic PixelBender filter that we can then export, and we could run this in After Effects. We could then bring it into Photoshop if we wanted to as well, or animate this across a timeline inside of Flash. No, we don't worry about seeing any of those slides. Let's just jump into Photoshop. And then I will show a few demos of how people are using this sort of stuff as well. So let me load up an image. I've got Let's just pick a safe one. Just a wallpaper here. Similar sort of scenery. And what I've done is download the Pixabender plugin for Photoshop, and it just shows up under Filter. And then down the bottom, I have my Pixabender gallery. So now inside of my Photoshop install directory, there's a Pixabender folder. And that Pixabender kernel that I've created, I can just go ahead and dump that in. And it would show up in this list. So it comes with a whole bunch of others. I've downloaded a few, like this zoom blur focus. So you can see it's focused on the top right-hand side there. All those parameters that you specify inside of the Pixabender toolkit show up in here as well, so you can start to play around with them. Might just increase the focal size, get a bit of a trippy effect. Sky's in focus from the top corner, but everything else starts to blur. So it sort of looks pretty cool. Very simple and easy to do with the Pixabender language just by moving these effects. Pixels around across the screen. The other thing here is you can see how we got process on GPU. If I turn that off and I start using the CPU and start playing around, now I get the spinning beach ball. It takes a bit more time. That's the difference about rendering across the GPU versus the CPU. So the performance hit is a lot greater. And that's why there's certain things you can't do inside of Flash, because it's going to try and do all these calculations on the CPU, and you're going to halt your user. And you know, Michael Kordahi mentioned in the keynote this elf. Your experiences, you know, don't have to be slow because your internet connection is slow. So you don't want to make your Flash experience slow just because your Pixabender file is going to be running slow. Yep. Not if you're running in Air. So at the moment, Flash only has GPU support for full screen video. So that's where you'll be using the GPU. Okay, so that's Pixabender in Photoshop. I can also do the same thing in After Effects as well. Probably should have preloaded this because After Effects is a beast of a product. You know, probably sit there for half a minute. But essentially, if I jump back out here, show you my Documents folder, run into After Effects, I've got a Pixabender plugins, and I downloaded this one off the website. So I'm not a mathematician. There's a Pixabender exchange on the Adobe website, and I like to term this poaching Pixabender filters. Just poach all these files, grab them off the web. The web's good for that. And you can throw them in here and start using them in your project. So I just grabbed a warp filter. So inside of After Effects, I'm going to go ahead and bring in maybe that same image that I showed you just before. Go to my wallpapers. Same file, and I'll just put that on the stage inside of After Effects. Okay, so now all I need to do is create an effect on top of this composition. I'm going to go down to Effect and choose Pixabender, and there's that warp file that I've got living inside of my folder, so I can customize how the effects would look inside of After Effects, just like I did inside of Flash. And again, I get everything. All the parameters show up in here, so I can start to modify these. Maybe we'll change the Y value, bring it down to the center. We can start animating this inside of After Effects as well. So you can start to create keyframes. So maybe I'll hit a keyframe on the Y value. I'll jump part through to 15 frames, and we'll move maybe the X across. Oops, just a few bunch of things. Make it just go up and down. And we'll jump across again. Change it back. Hopefully I've done this right. You can see that across the time frame, across those individual frames, we're animating the property very quickly inside of After Effects. So I can go ahead and preview that, and I can see that I now have a little warp effect that is modifying pixels on top of what's now going to be a video file. So we can use Pixabender for video, use Pixabender for graphics. Let's just close this one down. Or we can use Pixabender inside of Flash. So how many Flash developers do we have? Just about everyone. That's good. So how do we use it inside of Flash? So we can use Pixel Bender filters. I'm going to keep bouncing around between shader and filter. They're all pretty much the same thing. We can use it as a filter on top of a sprite or a display object or anything else that renders to the screen. If you know that we've got the filters array across our display objects, we can start to pile these up if we wanted to, mix them in with some of the flash effects as well as our own pre-built filters or something that we download from the web. We can use them as blend modes. And we can also use them as graphics fills inside of Flash as well, or Flex. And basically, we invoke those objects, and I'll show you how to do that in a second. But we do get access to those parameters that we specified inside of the toolkit. So we can grab the parameter using the shader object as a data property, and it has an array, a parameterized array of these parameters or properties that we want to modify. So again, the min value, the maximum value, everything is accessible inside of Flash as well. So let's hook it up to Flash or Flex. I'm going to use Flex, but it's all the same. It's all the same action script that you'd use anyway. So I'm going to jump to Flex. I've got a shaders file here. What I'm going to do is just replace that for you. This is the one that we just wrote before. I can go ahead and save this out. Save the filter as, you can see it's going to save as a PBK file. But that's not the compiled binary that we need to use inside of the Flash runtime. So the PBK is great for After Effects and for Photoshop, but what I want to do is take this out and say export the filter for Flash Player. Now we're saying Flash Player, it's going to be Flash Player 10 in the browser, or Flash Player 10 running in Air 1.5. So that's where you can take advantage of this sort of stuff. So we're going to export that out. I'll just put this on the desktop. Sample shader on the desktop. Hit save. Jump back into Flex Builder and grab the sample filter. Throw it in there. Just to make sure we're using the right one, not an older one. Okay, so we can load this in at runtime. Obviously, if we're going to use Flash, we can just use the URL loader and bring this in. Or we can embed it into the Flash object as well, so the compiled Swift. So I'm embedding that PBJ file, that compiled Pixel Bender filter. And I'm making it accessible by this name, sample shader class. We'll keep it consistent. We'll write sample filter. Then I've got a couple of different variables, a couple of different classes that are native to Flash Player 10. So I have the shader class and a shader filter. So I'm going to invoke an instance of this shader class down in my code here. So I'm going to have shader equals new shader. And this will take in some sort of byte array. So this is the Pixel Bender compiled binary that we just created before. And we've called that sample filter, so I can just grab that, throw it in. So a new instance of that embedded kernel that we're now going to have, so we can offset these pixels. We also need to create it as a filter, because what I'm going to do, I've got that same image or an image in my application, and we want to have that as a filter for the image. So I'm not doing a graphics fill or a blend or anything like that. It's going to be a filter. So my shader filter needs to be instantiated as well. Now that we've got our shader in there, so I can just reference that, which is fine. And then down the bottom of my application, I've got an image tag. So that's got an ID of img. So I can just type img.filter or filters. And that generally takes an array of filters. So we have multiple filters across a display object inside of the Flash runtime. So this is my shader filter. So I can save that, not a problem. Init's being called when my creation completes running. Go ahead and run it. And, whoop, not good. Okay. You can see it's not doing anything. That's because we set the default value for our parameter to be zero. So we want to hook this up to this horizontal slider inside of Flex or Flash so that we can start to manipulate this as well. So I've got a couple other variables up here. So these are the same ones that mimic the metadata that was attached to the pixel blender file. So we got the minimum value, the maximum value. We can go ahead and set this. The minimum value is equal to, we've already embedded our shader class or shader object. So shader.data. From the slides, I said that we have an array of parameters. So what I'm going to do, grab a square brackets for an array, put the quotes in because it was a parameterized array. And back over here, we can see that the code was looking for the parameter called amount. Jump back into Flex, type in amount, and then I've got min value, max value, and default value inside that kernel. So I'll grab min value, which is fine. And I can do the same for maximum value. Maximum value, data.data, grab the amount property again, max value, and then the default value. I'm going to grab that one as well. Data.data, amount again, default value. Now I've got these as bindable properties. This is so I can have them bound to my horizontal slider down the bottom. You'll see I've got minimum, maximum, and the initial value bound in there, which is fine. So I can have them all bound in. But what I want to do is hook up my slider. So I've got my slider already written here as well. And we need to do something. We need to modify the properties from our horizontal slider, pass that back into the Pixel Blender environment, make it do its recalculations, and then following that, reapply that filter to the image after we've modified the values or the properties in that filter object. So here I'm just going to write shader.data.amount. I don't need to worry about referencing it. I could if I wanted to. Shader.amount.value is equal to, and this could take multiple values because our parameter could be, in this case, our parameter is just a single float. It could have been a pixel or another sort of input or a float 2 or float 4, something expected 4 values. So I'm going to throw that in there. We get an event. Event.target points us back to our horizontal slider and we get the value property. And then we update the shader filter across the image. So I'll go ahead and hit save, hit run, got a problem again. What have I done? I did forget new. That's a problem. There we go. Good pickup. There's that same image that I had inside of Photoshop before, but now we're manipulating that Pixel Blender kernel and filter inside of the Flash environment. So it's quite easy to do this. I'm going to show you a whole bunch of other things that people are doing with the technology. Maybe it's something like this. So what I've got here is an image of the world, and I've got a spherized filter. So this is just sitting across the top of the image. And to start off with, I'm just going to get rid of this mask and run it. And you'll see here that I can click and drag, and I've just set up a move. This is actually written by Paul Burnett, our Flash evangelist in Sydney. And I'm just moving that image. But if you use this spherized filter as a mask for this, it's quite easy to create what looks like a spinning globe. Look at a mask movie clip specified there as well. So the only thing I'm doing there is just creating that mask. There's some toss physics in there as well. Throw physics, toss physics, whatever you want to call it. Going to steal Paul's joke here. He says he's got a name for people to create toss physics. Don't laugh, it's the developers. It's a good little one. I'm going to steal that. But now we have the same sort of thing there being pushed through that Pixel Blender kernel to make it look like it's been spherized. It's sitting across a globe. And then it's just the rest of it's just being hidden behind the scenes. It's being masked across that. Quite a simple little thing to achieve with the Pixel Blender environment. So it's not moving pixels, Well, in this case, it's moving pixels there, but it's not doing anything too complex. We can start to do that not just on bitmap graphics, but a whole bunch of other things. So I've got a whole bunch of different things here. It's the same spherized filter there across the bitmap. Maybe if I throw that on top of vector objects that are moving and being animated across the screen, so it's doing this in real time, or even maybe in video content. So I've got the spherized filter now running across the video content where I could still try and find out where the pause button is. I can still get that button sitting in the real spot. It's still an interactive object. I can go ahead and drag things around, maybe keep it playing. There it is. Make it a bit more trippy. Whatever this one is, like a kaleidoscope. This is the acid version of the filter. Maybe even pinching this and warping it. So it's quite customizable, and you can see that we're not even dropping a frame across this video. Now this is not an Air application, it's just running on standalone Flash Player. So it's rather fast. The standalone Flash Player there could be the same Flash Player that's running in the browser environment as well. That's a pretty neat sort of thing. But you could even apply that inside of Air across Ajax, HTML. Maybe I'll grab some sort of effect. What am I going to get? Something a bit trippy. Maybe this one. So this is from the EXT JavaScript page. You can download this. It's what they call their Pixel Bender Explorer. You can have a look at a whole bunch of different things there. You can demo it with video content. You can demo it with the browser, so we can bring up Google and maybe distort the Google web page. So because we now have HTML running in a combined runtime with Flash, we can do anything, any sort of effects that you can apply in the Flash world, you can apply directly on top of HTML content in Air as well. So you can start to do some pretty wicked things in 3D or with this as well. So that's a cool one to have a look at. It tells you who it was. You can go ahead and click about. You can get the PixelBender Exchange. Get the download links for a whole bunch of the filters as well, or just jump into the install directory for this app and grab those. That's a pretty cool one. But combining filters is a very interesting thing. Actually, before I do that, I'll do this one. Applying it across video. I don't have any audio up here, so you're not going to hear it too well. A German guy who wrote a pixel bender filter to do green screening, color keying. So normally you load a video in, your green screen. You can see here I've got the green screen at the back. But at runtime, he's modifying this YouTube video of himself dancing. Pretty cheesy music. But you can modify the RGB values and the threshold of how much of that green you want to knock out. So if I modify this here, you'll see that it's going to start doing bringing some of that green back in. And this sort of stuff is rather trivial to have a look at, because it's really just checking against the pixels against a various sort of a set range, which is that threshold. Modify it, subtract some of the green from that image, and you end up with a runtime keying of Flash video content running inside a Flash player. That's a single filter that's running. Nice example of a Flex application using multiple filters. Again, guys over in Europe are doing great stuff. If you were following Twitter before, I tweeted when I brought some of these examples, and I said, I love this dude because he does cool shit with Pixel Bender. And then all the other guys were like, oh, you love the dude. Oh. So they're all over Twitter saying, oh, sports loves dudes. But this dude, he does really cool stuff. So he's got some. This is the watercolor app. You can see at the top that he's going to turn this into a full paint sort of based application, a drawing tool online. I might start with a particular pigment, and I can draw this around the screen. But as I let go, it sort of seeps like watercolor would across the parchment. Maybe if I change the color to something else, or whack a red or something in there, change the pigment size, the amount of water we've got on the brush. What's that? It's just so much sort of stain we want to do. I can draw across this, and it would add the pixels together and have them shape across. So now it's multiplying those colors and returning the right results. That's a pretty neat one to have a look at. You can then turn on, maybe have a dry brush, see what that's going to look like. You can see it now a bit dotty because it's not going to seep around the paper. So it's a pretty neat one to have a look at. But this guy's gone to a whole different level. Got this one here where he's creating smoke and he's doing it across 3D space. At one point in time across his blog, if anyone's got a pen and paper, I will Twitter this, I have as before, but grab this URL because you've got really a ton of good stuff there. Generating smoke across mouse movements inside of containers and that sort of thing. So it's all been calculated with Pixel Blender filters. He also tried this with C. Have anyone here heard of Alchemy? That's on Adobe Labs. So he grabbed some C code and wrote all this in C first, used Alchemy, which is a project to convert C code into ActionScript, and then ran that inside of the Flash Player to see how that would perform. Then he also wrote a whole bunch and combination of Pixel Blender files. So he's loaded up, I think, at one stage, had close to 40 Pixel Blender kernels running at any one time to create smoke. So as my mouse is moving, I'm just going to sit my mouse there. He's got it filling up a 3D cube, so it's bouncing inside of the cube. I'm going to get that off there because it's going to fill up too much. But I can rotate this cube and have that Pixel Blender file render, or multiple Pixel Blender filters, render smoke and generate smoke from maths. So he's doing that in a separate thread. Still got some pretty good frame rates there. It's hovering at close to 25, 26 out of 30 that he's got it set at. And you can see the memory usage as well in there as well. But he's done some pretty neat things with watercolor, smoke, water. Maybe you have a glass of milk and you click your mouse and it injects some blue ink into the milk and you see the blue sort of disperse its way through the liquid. So that's an interesting use. I don't know how realistic some of that sort of stuff is. Putting it into an application sense, and this is where I think it's really important. Mac users, a couple of Mac users, when you type an incorrect password in to the login box, it sort of gives you that big shake and it says, no, you're wrong. You know, so we can start to do a whole bunch of stuff here as well. So I'm going to type in an incorrect password. This is just using some regular filters. This sort of flashes at you. It's sort of like that sort of warp effect or a water effect. It sort of ripples across. Or ripple effect, that's the word I'm looking for. Uses the ripple effect across that. I'll do it again so you can see what happens. Just to let me know that I've typed in the wrong password. So it's an interesting way of giving the user some feedback rather than just changing the RGB value of an image. So once I get into this one and I open up the main application, when I double click on any one record, it's going to pop up another window, but have a look at what it does to this main application window. It's warping it and sending it to the back, but that's giving the user again some sort of context. They know where their information's gone, it's not hidden, and they can still see it in the background. But even though it is warped, as I click through a lot of these, you can see they're still selected in the background. So that list is still being clicked on. And interestingly enough, we're applying some 3D effects in here as well, but this is all HTML. It's HTML content running in air, and the Pixel Blender stuff's being applied to those windows, and the 3D Flash stuff's again being applied to HTML objects as well. Some fancy flip stuff, you know, obviously not related to Pixel Blender, neither is the 3D stuff, but that warp and the bounce is all Pixel Blender stuff. Now what's nice, I can see a few people nodding in the audience, you can actually go ahead and download this application from the Adobe Developer Center, so developer.adobe.com, and have a look through, click through the air samples, and you can download the entire source code for the app. And then there's a massive article that's associated with it explaining how it was implemented, what code it's using. It's using a whole bunch of different libraries in here as well. If I click on About, you'll see that it's using jQuery, it's using the Air Encrypted Database. I think it's even using some Xt JavaScript libraries in there as well to build it. So there's some pretty neat combination of Pixel Blender in there. But Pixel Blender is not just for image processing. So I'll just flick back here for a second. there's a whole bunch of other uses for Pixel Bender. So just think of it for maybe generic number crunching. I know we started off saying it's great for cool programmable effects and they run really fast. Well, because they run really fast, you could do a whole bunch of other neat things. So we could start to do some mathematics and general processing across these as well. So maybe jumping up to this little community-based stuff that I'm showing you today, all the stuff that people have been building out there. Which application that loads a video in, I'll go ahead and click on play. The video is obviously not going to drop a frame as it's playing through, but we're going to offload or perform a whole bunch of mathematical routines. And I can calculate this with Pixel Bender, which is fine. If I go ahead and calculate with Pixel Bender, you'll see the video might drop for maybe a second or half a second. It would halt for half a second. If I try to perform the same mathematical calculations, and you'll see in a sec that there's a whole bunch of them. Not getting a scroll bar on this Flex app. It's not a very good demo, is it? Let's hide that. There we go. Calculate this one with Flash Player, and you'll see it halts for about 3 or 4 seconds. And this is what it's doing. It's doing a whole bunch of mathematical routines, probably at least 100 that it's offloaded to Flash or offloading to Pixel Bender. But you can see the difference in performance. Calculate with Pixel Bender, it stops for less than a second. Calculate with Flash Player, it stops for 3 seconds or so. And that's a big hit in terms of application performance, and given that this is a simple application, it's not complex. As you're starting to do a whole bunch of stuff inside of your Flash files with Pixel Bender, it's really going to help. Obviously, you're not going to push it to its limits and crank it up with a whole bunch of mathematical calculations. But some people do push it to its limits. With Flash Player 10, we introduced a whole bunch of sound APIs. So being able to mix MP3s and WAV files in an application in runtime and generate sounds, but there was still some sort of limit. And, people were blogging saying that they would be mixing 13 tracks and it would crash the Flash Player or end up crashing the browser because pushing it too hard. Well, again, that's just generic number crunching across mixing WAV files. So if you're not familiar or haven't heard of an AIR application that came out about a year and a half ago called Digimix, Digimix is now part of this Avery suite of online applications. They have image editing, color editing, effects, everything else. He's now got this audio editor in here as well. I'm just going to run this up. The Flex application for doing audio processing with Pixel Bender again. So it's more than just generic images now. And you'll see it's pretty full on. If you've seen Sound Booth or anything else, it's a very similar looking set of interface. I can grab a whole bunch of content from the libraries. He's even got this Nine Inch Nails track in here as well. We've got all the ambient loops, the background vocals, the guitars, the drums, the percussion, the synths. And I can drag and drop these into here. I'll just grab some of the longer ones, bring them into the environment. We'll grab some drums, drum loop. We'll grab some vocals, lead vocals, grab the long ones there. So it's loading these MP3s in. Into the Flash Player, so we can start to manipulate them. But rather than using Flash, as I said, it's going to offload all of that calculation. We'll just zoom out a ton, so I can extend this a little. Repeat the waveforms across there, and go ahead and hit. You can see, you can hear it mixing, and it's offloading all of that. But if I start clicking around, it really holds up. It's really performing across that. It's not jumping as I go back to reload the track and work out where it was. It's really, really snappy. So this same application would support, I'd guess, I'm not sure how far I'd push it, but I've seen it running with about 20 or 25 tracks in there. So it's a pretty neat one to be able to do and leverage the power of the multi-threaded environment that Pixel Bender gives you with Flash. Very different example of what you could do. So rather than cool effects, you can do some really wicked stuff there as well with audio. Okay. And I've finished 10 minutes early, but Grab my my Twitter, also flexdaddy.info is my blog. Hope to regularly update it with all these demos and stuff. Been a bit quiet the last 12 months, I should say. But grab the details. Email me is probably the best way if you want some of these demos that I showed, or links for resources and stuff as well. There's a ton of stuff on the Pixel Blender page on Adobe Labs, and then the Pixel Blender Exchange on adobe.com to grab a whole bunch of compiled kernels and everything else for After Effects, Photoshop, or Flash that you can start to leverage. And then that Blackbook Safe one with the warping of the windows, same concepts apply if you want to integrate that into a web-based application with Flash as well. So it doesn't have to be an Air app. It could be a web-based app as well. So is that something that people would be interested in using? I guess it's sort of feedback for me to take back to people in Adobe. Would you be interested in using Pixel Blender in your Flash applications? Is it useful? Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Question? Great. There you go. Real use case of effects and everything inside of Pixel Blender. So everyone has to go and speak to this guy because he sounds like he knows what he's doing. Yeah. Oh yeah, there's a whole bunch of different fractal ones up there, isn't there? So there's a couple anyway. There's ray tracing examples. You can get pretty complex. There's a whole bunch of other competitions that had been run in the past as well. Nvidia were even running a Pixel Blender competition at one stage when Pixel Blender came out. So it's really targeted at high end processing because you can just offload a whole bunch of stuff in the different environments to really speed up a whole bunch of the things that you're doing. So it's cool. Not something that I can probably answer right now. We're really focused on having a consistent environment for Flash, and given the announcements around the Open Screen project and pushing Flash and Air to various devices, we really got to think about a consistent code base that will work across multiple environments. At this stage, Air running on devices, I've got Air running on a couple of mobile internet devices. It may chew it up a little bit because the amount of power and juice you've got in the battery running on these little gadgets isn't going to run so well. I don't know if we'll see GPU support in Flash for Pixel Blender, maybe in 11. I really don't know, but it's something that as computer power gets stronger again and faster, we can start taking advantage of that. But it was really based on the shader models that we had to sit to make sure Flash could support a whole range of different devices. So we had to drop back to shader model 2, so we weren't going to do GPU support with that specification for Pixel Blender, really just to cover our bases, to keep that consistent runtime. So we really have to keep consistency. That's what we advertise and we talk about. You guys can create a Flash object and it just works. And we need to make sure that you can continue to create Flash objects that will just work, rather than a Flash object that's going to take advantage of GPU on Windows and Mac and not do it on a handset or anything else. So you don't want to have to code multiple ways. No, different things. The question was, how does Pixel Blender relate to the 3D model inside of Flash? And it's a different thing. We've got a sort of like a faux 3D, 2.5D sort of environment inside of Flash. Essentially, we've got the X, Y, and Z axis across two. So it's really talked about operating 2D objects in a 3D space. So that sort of stuff's going to be great for the likes of maybe Paper Vision and that sort of thing. But you're not modifying pixels. And doing those sort of calculations. They're two different things. You could use them in a combined fashion like that smoke was. I really don't know what's happening behind the scenes there with the code. But they are two separate things, but you could use them in conjunction with each other. there's no other questions, you've 5 minutes to lunch. You could probably queue up in the line and get in early before everyone else. So thanks for jumping in.